Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, this week, always happy to have you here, of course. Got a really good show coming up for you here in just a minute. Well, you know, when we get to the featured interview, because that's really the meat and potatoes of this show, isn't it? Let me tell you a little bit about next week's show, because it's going to be a good one, too. We're going to be talking about the spirits of India. That's right. There's a really fascinating story and kind of an emerging contemporary spirits market and industry coming out of that country these days. And we're going to be talking with two or three different producers, talk about some of the traditions of making different spirits in India, what they are. We're going to taste a few things. We're going to talk about the market. There's a lot of really cool stuff happening over there these days, and that's what we're going to be bringing to you. So I'm really excited about that one. We're going to be talking with a whiskey producer. We're going to be talking with a couple of liqueur producers. So it's really going to be cool. I'm looking forward to tasting a lot of the stuff I've never tasted before. So I'm really looking forward to checking it out and sharing that with you all. On this week's show, our featured interview is with my friend Chris Cabrera. And Chris is a spirits industry veteran and also an exceptional activist in the LGBTQ plus community, award-winning activist and spirits industry professional, I should add. And I will let them tell you all about that in the featured interview. And we bounce over there in just a second. But we're going to talk about issues that relate to the hospitality industry, the liquor industry, and the LGBTQ plus community. And then actually a lot of stuff too that really just, I think, generally, relates to the LGBTQ plus community across the board. So really great conversation. Chris just presented a couple different seminars at Tales of the Cocktail recently, and we're kind of focusing on one of those here and talking about what they did and some of the panelists have participated, some of the issues that were discussed. I actually tuned in, as you know, Tales of the Cocktail, we talked about this before, was an all virtual event this time around. I think it went off really well. So congratulations to them. I did tune into the one particular seminar that we're talking about and watched Chris and their panel do what they did, and it was very, very informative, very stimulating, very interesting, and very challenging at times. And so we're going to touch on a lot of those issues in our featured interview. We are also going to be bringing you some other shows based on some Tales of the Cocktail activities. You know, we do that every year. We'll have some more stuff coming down the pipeline. And of course, like we always do as well, sometimes we're just going to talk about spirits and beers and all kinds of other fun stuff on the NOLA Drink Show. As always, friends, I do encourage you to get the podcast because you can hear our podcast only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. So if you're listening on the radio, go check out noladrinks.com. You'll find the podcasts there, and you can link to your favorite podcast platform in order to get the show. So there you go, friends. We're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to be back with Chris Cabrera. Chris joins us over Zoom from New York City. Come on back.
Look at my king all dressed in red. Aiko, one day. I bet you $5 he'll kill you dead. Shagamofinane. Talking about hey now. Aiko, one day. Shagamofino, anane. Shagamofinane.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening to the show, friends. Always happy to have you here, as you know. And as you know, if you were listening at the top of the show, I am pleased to be joined by my featured interview and guest and friend, Chris Cabrera. How are you, Chris?
I'm great, Brian. How you doing?
I'm doing really good. It's great to see you again, albeit over Zoom. I would prefer to see you sitting at the bar at Sylvain doing shots, like the last time I saw you in person.
But, as I would, trust me.
But it is great to see you, and we had a great opportunity to catch up for a little while, and I'm really excited to have you here. Hot off doing the seminar there at Tales of the Cocktail. We'll get into that in a second. But I want to start with a couple things. The first thing, you found yourself in the top 100. Why don't you tell us what top 100 you found yourself in and what that means?
I made Drinks International top 100 most influential figures this year. And so I actually came out number 47 out of 100. So that's not too shabby.
That's pretty. That is not too shabby. You're in the first half of the top 100. That's even better. Yeah. The other 50 losers. No, I'm kidding. that was awesome and incredibly well deserved. It's a very prestigious thing to be named. And so, once again, congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, and on other personal news, we're going to talk about this more a little bit later, because I was going to introduce you as the New York City brand ambassador for Grey Goose there working for Bacardi. But that's not the case really anymore now, is it?
Actually, no. So I'm actually now officially the national LGBTQ+ portfolio ambassador for Bacardi.
That is freaking awesome. And I am so happy for you. And we were talking about this before, because there is not a better person on the planet for that job than you. And I'm just so thrilled for you. I want to talk about it a little bit more, but can you give us like the 30-second version of what that job is going to mean for you and what that job is going to mean for Bacardi?
Well, so they actually created this role for me. It did not exist within the hierarchy or the ranks of the ambassador team or advocacy team. But our vice president of on-premise, Heidi Vargas, is a wonderful, wonderful visionary. And she really saw the need to create this role to further inclusivity, not only within the industry, but within the ranks of Bacardi. And so I've actually been in talks for a little bit now and just trying to figure it out, because we're basically kind of building this role and the department, we're building the plane as it's flying. It's never really existed within any large portfolio. And so this would be the first of its kind. And what I'm really going to focus on is the LGBTQ+ community. Of course the bars and accounts itself, but also the people within those communities, within the bar industry, to really give them the opportunities that they maybe have never been encouraged, to apply for or to, compete for or to join. And so it's, we're going to start kind of locally, move it regionally once we can travel safely again, and then eventually nationally.
That's absolutely fantastic. And again, you're the perfect person for that. And I can't wait to, as we were talking about, I can't wait to see you down here in New Orleans. And we were already kind of planning that post-COVID, how that's going to look.
Yes. New Orleans is one of my favorite cities in the world, hands down. And I was gutted not to be able to be there this summer with you all, and experience Tales of the Cocktail, the way it has been. But yeah, it's definitely in the calendar as soon as it's safe again.
Yeah,
sure.
That's great. We were kind of earmarking Southern Decadence over Labor Day weekend, I think, which would be perfect. Well, let me ask you, since you mentioned it, because you did a seminar, we'll get to this in a second, a seminar at Tales of the Cocktail that you moderated, and you did sort of the first iteration of it last year at Tales, and you did it again this year. But I was very proud of what everybody at Tales pulled off this year. I mean, the way the virtual stuff worked, and I thought the content was great. I thought in a lot of ways, because, we were all watching these seminars virtually, and then the fact that they're available now on the YouTube channel and all that kind of stuff, I hope they keep some of that stuff. I mean, I thought it was some of the stuff was so accessible because you weren't forced to choose between 10 different things at the same time.
Exactly. And also, I moderated two seminars, and I was part of another panel.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. And, Andy Seymour actually reached out to me, and he, personally just wanted to thank me, for both seminars. He had the actual time to watch them. As you know, Liquid Productions hosts all these parties. And for a lot of us that go to Tales, it's work. Right. So we're like working the entire time. So we're not really able to see these seminars or to support the people within these seminars, and because we're actually kind of hosting them or moderating them. And so it was really nice to be able to have this different avenue. And I personally, I think this was the most inclusive Tales I've ever witnessed, down to the winners of the Spirit Awards, to the, you know, seminars that were provided, and to the just the genuine, you know, the just the genuine support of the Tails Foundation and people like Caroline Rosin and Alex Smith and Lola Thomas. And, mm-hmm. you know, they really put their heart and soul into making it, you know, the best it could be under the circumstances. And so I was, you know, I was genuinely proud to be a part of it this year.
That's great. I think you touched on something here, and I don't want to go too far down this path, but I think it's related. You know, I found, and maybe it was just my perspective because of what I chose to tune into and not, you know, look, we love Tails for what it is when the parties are fun and the pop-up bars are fun and the tasting rooms are fun and they're informative. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's actually something to be learned if you're approaching it that way and seeing new products, meeting new people, so on and so forth. But I found something with this one. I thought like so much of the seminar programming and some of those things were so much more front and center now because of the way it was presented that I found it easier to focus on that stuff and not feel compelled because, you know, I don't work. Well, I do work when I'm a Tails. I'm either taping shows but you're invited, say, to something and somebody's got a private thing going and they invite you to come to some brand thing and it conflicts with going to a seminar. And none of that was going on this year. And so I found I could actually tune into the seminars. And I also found if I couldn't tune into a particular seminar, since it's online on YouTube, I can go back and watch it. So I'm still getting caught up on things I want to check out. And I think that's all really cool.
Yeah. I was excited to be a part of it. I was excited to see it. And, you know, I was very heavily involved with Tails this year. I was a guest speaker for a few things. I was part of two seminars, the Spirit Awards. I was a mentor as well. So, you know, it was really crazy. After the awards on Thursday night, and I looked at my girlfriend, I was like, yeah, I'm exhausted. Tails kind of kicked my butt. And, you know, except for the sweating and the drinking, I'm pretty tired.
Yeah, it's like the emotional. Yeah, right. I get it.
Yeah, so. Except for the sweating and drinking that would have happened if I would have actually been there. I was, you know, it pretty much, you know, consumed my entire week.
Isn't it weird? I mean, I didn't experience that. I'm used to Tails just kicking my ass more like you said the first way. It's like, I don't want to see another alcoholic beverage. And I've been out till 2 o'clock in the morning every night. And I never do that. Yeah. The emotionally taxing part, I'm sure. I mean, you had a lot of heavy lifting. One of the really cool things that you did and one of the panels that you moderated, and I want to talk about that a little bit, which certainly one of the best named seminars, Chris, the Queer Handbook for the Recently Woke. That is awesome. The name is awesome.
Well, so I have to give that to my friend Anna McLaughlin. You know, she actually helped me with the name of my seminar last year, but you know, I had just watched Beetlejuice, and it's one of my favorite Tim Burton movies. And uh-huh. You know, the Handbook for the Recently Deceased. We had a few drinks, and you know, we were celebrating Colin Appiah's 50th birthday, you know, upstate. And so, you know, we were just going back and forth, and she's like, what about the recently, you know, the Queer Handbook for the Recently Woke? And I was like, that's freaking brilliant. Write it down.
I love that name. That name is just great. When I was scrolling through looking at it and I'm like, oh, that the name alone. Well, Chris, tell us a little bit. Let's see, we got a good 5 minutes before we take a break. So tell people a little bit, you know, who was on the panel? Let's start there. And then what was the short version? We'll talk more about this, but the thrust of the panel.
Yeah, of course. So my panel was about just elite rock stars, like legends, not only my friends, but just people that I respect, people that are just doing so much within the industry, you know, leaders, you know, the new leaders of the industry, as you know, I like to say. So I had Tiffany Barrier, who is a recent inductee for the Dame Hall of Fame. Amazing, amazing bartender, consultant, historian from Atlanta, Georgia. I had Chef Deborah Van Treese, who owns an award-winning restaurant in Atlanta called Twisted Soul House. Just an amazing James Beard award-winning chef, you know, just a good friend as well. And we had Ezra Starr, formerly of Drink, also a consultant and just, you know, award-winning bartender. I had Sagan Gray. They are a bartender in Boston, but also a co-op farmer and educator on, you know, the transgender community and queer community. And then I, you know, what I changed from last year was I brought an international perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Alejandro Maza, who was a portfolio ambassador for Pernod Ricard out of Milan. So he was out of Milan, Italy. And so, you know, it was just kind of this powerhouse of individuals who were all very different in their own right, all queer, of course, but just, you know, very different. We, you know, we had, of course, a transgender perspective, a non-binary perspective, which was me. You know, we had a gay man, which is Alejandro. And then we had, you know, two queer, powerful Black voices, mm-hmm. which was Deborah and Tiffany. So I really felt whenever I create panels, I really always want to, it's always going to be impossible to include everyone. But as you know, I try to do it as much as I can. And I try to you know, our spectrum, our rainbow is so big. And there's so many different facets to it. And so I always try to incorporate at least one from all the, you know, all of the letters of our acronym.
That's great. And actually, that was something I was going to ask you down the road, but since you mentioned it, because I think one of the important points that you made that a lot of people maybe don't think about, but they should, is that, you know, there's, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, Chris, there's sort of sometimes a homogenization of the gay community as it's viewed by the straight community out there. And that's not the case. It's very diverse. Identities are very different. And I like what Chef Deborah said at one point. She said, you know, don't think we all like each other. Sometimes there are people that we don't like.
Yeah, I think that's a misconception. When you're part of a marginalized community, people, you know, think that there's no bias or animosity or you know, there's no polarization.
Prejudice, sure, yeah.
Marginalized communities, but you know, it is, you know, it's something I'm sure we can get into later, but the LGBTQ community to a degree is very segregated, you know, just like regular society. And so, you know, it's important for me to bring different voices every time. Like I just, you know, did a seminar for BCB. We recorded it yesterday, but you know, I have a Turkish Saudi bisexual. I have a queer Black lesbian, and I have, you know, a Puerto Rican, you know, queer woman. So it's always about bringing in, showing, you know, our within our industry, but also our straight counterparts that there are a lot of different colors to the rainbow.
Absolutely.
You know?
And when you mentioned the idea also too, when you have different cultural, ethnic perspectives, geographic perspectives, economic perspectives, all of these things that make it very, very different. And I also took Chef Deborah to, I don't want to make this sound trite, but I also took Chef Deborah to mean sometimes somebody you meet is just a jerk and you don't like them.
Yeah, Chef Deborah, I mean, she's, you know, she's an amazing woman, but she's also a proud Black woman, mm-hmm. and a force to be reckoned with, you know. She's become, you know, we don't ever really know the plight of what a Black woman has to go through to get through this world and to become successful. And when you add being a lesbian to that, you can only imagine, you know, how much more harder it is. And she's a James Beard Award winning chef. She's, you know, and I think because she's never taken no for an answer if it feels unjust. And I think that's why I wanted to bring her. She's not part of the cocktail industry, but she's part of our industry.
Sure.
And I think it was important to have someone who is a proprietor, who is a chef, who is, you know, and, you know, still lives in the South and has still proven to be as successful as she is despite all the odds.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. She was amazing on the panel.
Yeah.
Let's do this, Chris. Let's take a little break and we're going to come back and chat a little bit more. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. We're chatting with Chris Cabrera. Come on back. Back to the show. Brian D is here with you. Thanks for listening to the Noel Drink Show, friends. Happy to have you with us, and very happy to be chatting with my good pal, Chris Cabrera. And once again, Chris, as we do, having all these great sidebar conversations in between segments, but I do think this time, which is rare for me, I kind of remember where we left off. It's probably because we're taping somewhat early in the day and I'm just drinking water. So that when this is going on, but you did, you moderated a couple great panels. I've got to go back and watch the other one, but the one we're talking about here today is the Queer Handbook for the Recently Woke. And it was great, great panelists, which we kind of talked about in the last segment. Let me ask you about some of the things that you touched on. You in particular said something that I thought was really powerful. And one of the themes, let me back up just a little bit. One of the themes was talking about the importance of pronouns and for members of the LGBTQ+ community. And you said something that was so compelling to me that I just want to have you follow up on. One of the terms that we've been throwing around lately is, and you know, it's a sign of respect and being sensitive when you ask somebody, quote unquote, what are your preferred pronouns? And so that's how we've kind of been, many of us anyway, have been kind of saying it lately. And you said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth or paraphrase, but you said it's not preferred, it's the way they are. And I thought that was awesome. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's when you say preferred, preferred kind of insinuates, well, they're not really, there's no tangibility in them. You know, I think our pronouns just are. They are what they are. They're not preferred. You know, that's not what we prefer you to call us. That's what you should call us.
It's our identity, right?
It's our identity. It's how we identify, you know, and, you know, even when, you know, Brian, when I was on your show last year, for my first LGBTQ+ seminar, I was still she and her, and I was Christina, you know, and it was really, as a 41-year-old, you know, coming out again for the second time in my life as non-binary was, an awakening for me, you know, to finally understand for there to be a definition for who I was, you know, a gender identity for who I was. When I came out 25 years ago, there was just LGBT. That's it. And there wasn't what we had today. There wasn't all these, you know, this age of information, you know, to find, you know, books to read and articles and podcasts to listen to and shows to watch. You know, most of us back then, you know, especially myself coming from a very conservative, you know, Latin town in Texas, I really had to figure out who I was all by myself. You know, I didn't have anyone guiding me. I didn't have anything to read or really figure out. And so I chose, you know, lesbian because that's what I felt most connected to, but it never really felt like it fit me. And, you know, it wasn't until after I did my seminar and I really started doing research on what non-binary meant that I realized that's who I was, mm-hmm. You know? And so I, you know, at 41 years old, coming out for the second time in my life, I changed, you know, my name to Chris Cabrera and I changed my pronouns from she and her to they and them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it's been, you know, pronouns for me has been something that I've spoken about at great length because it's, you know, they need to be understood. I always say it's about respect, you know, at the end of the, you know, it's about validating our, you know, our identity, you know, an identity that some of us have worked our entire lives, you know, to find, to sort through. And so, you know, if we choose to go by they and them, you may not understand it, but you have to respect it.
Absolutely. It's who you are. And, you know, and you kind of, you did cover a lot of this because that was actually something I wanted to ask you about. Another compelling thing you said, talking about growing up. Where in Texas did you grow up again? I've forgotten. I apologize.
So I was born in El Paso, Texas.
That's right. Okay.
Border city right near Juarez and on the border of New Mexico. I moved to Austin when I was, you know, fairly young, well, 17, on the verge of being 18. And so, I say I'm from Austin because that's where I kind of became me.
Okay.
And, you know, El Paso was, it was a really hard time. And, you know, I don't have any really good memories. And so for me, it's not that I block it out. I just choose not to speak about it, you know, because it didn't help me become who I am today.
Okay. You said something that, and you touched on it, but let me kind of ask you to elaborate further, because I found that very compelling also what you said, is that, because I think lots of times, and then I'll digress again, that I think lots of times when we have people who don't understand and who erroneously will say, especially if they dispute this aspect of biology and think that it's a, illness or it's a choice or something like that, you know, which is of course egregious and wrong. But people will say, well, if they're born this way, then how come they didn't know who they were right out of the gate? And what I mean by that is, and something that you said that was very compelling, is we all search for frameworks. We all search for frames of reference in which we can make sense of things. And you talked about when you grew up, there was only LGBT. You had mentioned earlier too, you know, not necessarily having role models or mentors or peers around. So you're sort of, I'm guessing, maybe grasping at straws to say, you know, what words do I use and what definitions do I use to identify myself? And when they're not out there, then they're not out there. Is that a fair way to put it? I know it's kind of vague what I just said, but.
No, I mean, no, there's truth to it. You know, when I was grasping at straws, I was trying to figure it out, you know, and for so long, I mean, this is the thing, you know, I'm constantly learning about our community and there are things that are constantly changing and words that are, you know, being created, you know, for the fight for inclusivity, you know, to be more inclusive and to create a more inclusive space. And so, you know, for me, it's coming out when I did, and, you know, the kind of environment that I did. Yeah, it was, I just wanted to, I knew I was queer. And even then, back then you didn't say queer. Right. You know, you were gay. You just said gay.
Right.
You know? And so queer was really not a word that you used. Queer was actually a derogatory term. You know, you really didn't say queer very much. And so when I say it now, it's finding words that fit who you are and can express who you are and being comfortable with them. I think is more important, you know, is an important thing about when I speak and when I try to educate, you know, within my own community and outside of it, I think is really, I think there's a lot of stigma around certain words. And I think it's really kind of removing that stigma and explaining why those words aren't necessary. And, you know, you may not, you don't have to choose to use those words to describe yourself, but you have to respect and accept that those words exist for a reason.
Right. And is it fair to say then too, also having the necessary words to properly describe things?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, being non-binary, I feel, you know, I know it's crazy for a lot of people to think, but at 41 years old, I finally feel like I know who I am. Like there's finally a term to define who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never, you know, my entire life, I've always felt like I didn't belong to the group that I represented. You know, I felt like not an invader, but I just didn't feel like I belonged. And I felt like that, you know, I'd go to lesbian bars and it was just a personal thing, but I just didn't feel like this was my home. You know, this is the, and so when I really came to terms with the fact, you know, when I had that aha moment and I was like, I'm non-binary, it was like this huge weight was lifted off my shoulders and my heart. And for the first time I could look myself in the mirror and say, yeah, you're Chris Cabrera. That's exactly who you are. Mm. And, you know, it's a very gratifying feeling, to finally have, you know, in at the beginning of your 40s.
That's awesome. How about this, Chris? Let's take a little break on that thought, and we're going to come back and chat with you more. Can you stick around?
Thank you. Yeah, sure.
Very cool. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
Well, after I'm through.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening in, friends. Happy to be joined by my good friend Chris Cabrera here, and we are talking about, among other things, the seminar that you put on, Chris, at Tales of the Cocktail, the Queer Handbook for the Recently Woke. So many good things to unpack there, and we've been sort of, as I always say, we've been unpacking some of these things and having great conversation in between these segments, which is fantastic. But there's a couple things that I in this segment that I wanted to touch on that I thought was really fantastic. One of the things that you actually talked about, and somebody mentioned, and I forget which panelist, but I thought it was very compelling, the idea that all of us can learn acceptance from the LGBTQ plus community. And I know it's not a perfect world and the community is not perfect at it, or the communities, I should say, are not perfect at it. But I thought that was a really compelling thing to say, because the LGBT, and I don't want to put, you know, words in your mouth again or paraphrase too much, but I think the idea, if I remember correctly, was that, you know, the LGBTQ plus community, as we've been discussing, is consistently identifying itself, further articulating itself, I'll use that word. And that's created a dynamic of necessary acceptance. And we can learn those lessons in larger society, I think. And I thought that was a great point.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, I think as a community, we have constantly, you know, throughout time had to define who we are in different ways and redefine who we are. Because, you know, visibility changed, and, you know, the more visibility our community gained, you know, it was more, you know, the ownership on us, on how we identified, and kind of almost the LGBTQ community has always been very resilient, and they've always, you know, taken care of each other. And I think that's one thing that one of the driving forces of what made me an activist. You know, it's something that I kind of gradually grew into. It was very organic. It wasn't something, you know, I just didn't wake up one day and said, I'm going to start fighting the good fight, you know, and this is what I'm going to do. You know, it really, the need to take care of each other and respect each other and love each other and watch out for each other has always come out of necessity, because for a long time, we only had each other. You know, we didn't really have the outside world. So there was only us. You know, you've seen it, you know, in you know, the quiet back door, no window gay bars in the 60s, and, you know, moving through the 80s and the AIDS epidemic, where, you know, it was really up to the queer community to take care of the sick and dying, because no one else was. You know, up until cisgender straight people started getting HIV, it was really this gay plague, as they called it. And so, you know, this being able to accept who we are and take care of each other has always come out of necessity. And that's what happened for me during the pandemic. On the onset of the pandemic, as a Great Youth Ambassador, we got certain budgets, you know, to help with like feeding the industry and creating food programs and, you know, making sure that, you know, that these bartenders were at least getting fed. And, you know, we worked with all of our accounts, but for me, it was different. It was like, okay, well, how am I going to take care of the LGBTQ plus community? Because there's drag queens and performers and dancers and a lot of different, you know, facets of our community that were also, you know, they were hurting as well, you know, from the pandemic. So for me, it was like, that's just where my mind naturally went, was to make sure that the LGBTQ plus community within the industry was being cared for. Mm-hmm. And how could I get them fed? How could I work out these virtual shows where, you know, I might not be able to pay drag queens what I nearly was able to pay them, but I could give them something and get them doing what they do best, perform. Because that's also for a lot of people within the LGBTQ plus community, like drag queens, it is therapeutic for them to perform. It's their livelihood, but they almost need it to survive. Mm-hmm. That's who they are as individuals. So for me, it was always like, how am I, you know, I created these like live drag shows during shelter in place here in New York, because we shut down completely for almost 3 months or for about 3 months. So it was really, you know, finding these tiny little ways, you know, working with Another Round, Another Rally to create specific micro grants for the LGBTQ plus community in New York City. So I could get money into their pockets right away so they could buy groceries, so they could pay their cell phone bill, so they could, you know, maybe at least for a couple of weeks, not worry about, you know, where the income was coming from. So I think it's, our community has always been accepting, because it's had to be.
Mm-hmm. That's really well said. And I think that was a really good take home point from this, that, you know, we need to all open our eyes and learn from people who are not the same, in the same space, not from the same culture, not from the same whatever as ourselves, because there's wisdom in all of that. And those experiences that the queer community has had has a lot to speak to life about for all of us. And I think it was a very compelling point. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to add, so I was actually talking to a bartender and he was at the Stonewall Riots. His name is Tree, and he still works at Stonewall Inn. And I've been keeping in touch with him. He's in his 80s now. You know, he tells the best stories in the world, but he, you know, we were talking about what everything going on, shelter in place, and he's like, our community will get through it. We've seen worse, you know, because he lived through the AIDS epidemic. He's like, we'll get through this together because that's what we've always done. And I think, you know, those words from him, you know, being at the actual Stonewall riots,
right,
going through all of this and living through, you know, where he lost 98% of his friends, you know, during the 80s. And so to hear someone like that say, this is what our community does. We'll get through this because we've always gotten through it. And so that, for me, that's what has always resonated in me to keep. That's also been like a driving force, you know, something in my mind to be like, we got to keep going because I know you will see, you know, the other side of this one day.
Right. Great. Let me ask you this. And we got about 3 minutes left, Chris, before I got to close the portion of the radio show out. So very quickly, we talk about this idea that there's, we all need to learn, but we all need to be responsible for ourselves. And meaning those of us in the straight community, it's not your obligation. You want to teach, you want to share, but it's our obligation to come to the table and learn, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm here to educate to a point, you know, I'm here to answer questions to a point because I actually like teaching, you know, it's something that I enjoy. And so, but there is, to a certain point, accountability. Accountability for the things that you choose to know and want to know. One thing you can do, you know, to hold yourself accountable is see who your group of friends are. How diverse, you know, is the company you keep? Is it very homogenized?
Mm-hmm.
Is it very, you know, only kind of one opinion or one ethnicity? You know, or is it just, you know, one, you know, kind of, you know, is it just, are you just hanging out with a group that kind of all looks like you?
Mm-hmm.
Is there no, you know, when I look at like videos and I'll go online and I'll see, you know, some, you know, people, you know, posting about birthday parties and whatnot. And everybody at that birthday party, they're all straight and they're all white. And so I'm like, you have to step outside that comfort zone. You have to, if you really want to learn, and if you really want to understand what it means to walk in someone else's shoes, then you have to have a diverse, you know, group of people to completely, like, to constantly engage you.
Bring that perspective, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Bring up different perspectives to question you, to question the way you're thinking. Maybe it may, you know, to bring up, like you said, different perspectives. And if your group just looks all like, it's very homogenized, it all looks like one big group of one person, then what are you really learning?
Right. And then everything you're going to say is high five.
It's going to be all like-minded people. And yeah, it's just going to look, and I'm guilty. We all have biases as humans. We're all fallible. We all have biases, but it's something I'm constantly asking myself is like, I try, you know, especially I'm always trying to bring new perspectives into, you know, my tribe, into like my circle, you know, of friends, because I don't want to get comfortable with my thought process and my perspectives on things. So, but you can't do that if everyone that you're hanging out with, everyone that you're choosing to engage with looks like you.
Absolutely. Chris, do me a favor. We got 30 seconds left before we close the portion of the radio show. You're sticking around for another Shot with Nola Drinks, the podcast portion of our show. Tell people where we can connect with you real quick.
Sure. So my Instagram handle is Chris Cab. So it's CHRSCAB. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. Please follow me. You know, I'm constantly giving updates about what's going on within the community. DM me if you have any questions. And, you know, follow me on Facebook. It's Chris Cabrera. And if you want to, you know, work with me in any, you know, capacity, it's Chris Cabrera. So Chris without the I, CHRS Cabrera, CABRERA 78 at Gmail.
Awesome. And all this will be in the show notes, friends, so you'll be able to get it there. I'm going to sign off the portion of the radio show. Chris is sticking around for another Shot with Nola Drinks. Go get the podcast, friends. Remember, right now, more than ever, be kind to one another. Always use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all.
What are you doing in a place like this? I said I called your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try.
All right, everybody. Hey, I hope you are finding this conversation with Chris Cabrera stimulating, educational, fun, inspirational, all that good stuff. We love Chris. Happy to have them on the show, and as always. And yeah, really great interview, and we are going to continue that conversation here in just a second. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for sticking around. Happy to be chatting with my pal, Chris Cabrera. And Chris, what we're going to continue the conversation just briefly on the seminar that you did, the Queer Handbook for the Recently Woke at Tales of the Cocktail. And then we're going to do a pivot. We're going to, you know, and it's all these damn words that we start like pivot.
2020, you know, I live in a corporate world now, so I have to say pivot a lot, but every time I say it, my soul dies just a little bit.
God, I hate hackneyed expressions, and I really try and avoid them, and pivots become the new one. There was one down here too. You and I were talking a little bit about, you know, life in New York City and life in New Orleans and things like that, and when the storms were, you know, we were having these threats of hurricanes in recent weeks, you know, there's shelters, right, that people can go to, hurricane shelters. And there's a new term that we all now know down in this part of the world. It's called congregant sheltering. And, you know, so the idea is, because obviously in times of pandemic, we want to avoid shelters where people are close together, you know, laying on cots on the gymnasium floor, I guess, you know, maybe a way to think about it. And so, like, they were calling it, saying, like, you know, that's why they were putting people in hotels as much as they possibly could and things, because they wanted to avoid congregant sheltering. And I'm like, okay, there's another 2020 term that I will take away.
Congregant,
like a congregation, congregant sheltering. Okay. Yes, there you go. So the next time that you're hiding out with a whole group of people, you can say, we are congregant sheltering.
Well, this is New York, so you don't do anything with a lot of people. So you just, it's like, you know, you got one or two people and that's it.
There you go. Perfect. You just look out the window and wave, right?
Well, that's actually what happened during shelter in place. You know, I live on the 10th floor, and so just looking out across, everyone's home. So, you know, you just wave.
Just wave.
You know? There's a firehouse behind me. They would do drills. We would just shout out the window, hey, good luck. Firefighters, that's cool.
That's hilarious. Oh, man.
That's New York living.
That's New York living. There it is. We're going to talk about that in a second, actually. I want to ask you one other thing about the seminar, because there was one other sort of take-home message that I really enjoyed, and I'm going to forget. I apologize who said this, but talking about, you know, this idea when you're take the approach of being a traveler. So if you're coming from, say, the straight community, or if you're coming from somewhere else to go visit a place, and I, as being somebody who worked internationally and loved to travel, all that kind of stuff, I'm like, this is such a great analogy. Like, come into, if you're going to learn about the LGBTQ+ community, come into it as if you're traveling to a foreign country, and come in with that kind of wonder and that joy and that opportunity to explore something new that you may not know. And I thought, wow, what a great way to approach something in life. And I'm like, it really, that one just kind of stuck with me. And I thought it was a great way to say it. Come in and learn, have your eyes wide open, learn how to say please and thank you. I've always found that was important when you travel, and then shut up and listen and learn and enjoy the experience.
I mean, you kind of, you know, said it in a nutshell, just listen and learn. You know, it's about listening right now.
Yep.
It's about learning right now. That's where we need to be as a society. That's where we need to be as an industry. It's about listening and learning. You know, I'm very fortunate and grateful for some of the leadership that's been within Bacardi that's supported me. You know, just to give you an example, you know, John Cicero and Matt Titus are, you know, two cisgender white guys, you know, older And, you know, they've just been, you know, so amazing. And the fact that they've come to me and said, you know, thank you, Chris. You know, it's, they stay quiet, but they're not staying quiet because they're trying not to take a stand. They're staying quiet because they're trying to learn. And then they learn, and then they reach out to me and they say, thank you. And, you know, they've said, you know, you've been able to open our eyes to a world that we weren't just privy to before. And so, you know, I think it's that willingness to act as a guest, to remember that you're a guest, right? And as a guest, you don't come into someone's home, you know, you don't come in, you know, you don't go to another country and try to tell them about their traditions. You don't try to tell them about, you know, about the way they live their lives. You know, you observe, right? You observe and you learn. And that's the same with any marginalized community, LGBTQ+. You know, it's all about remembering, A, you're a guest. And when you're a guest, you know, it's about being respectful and understanding that this isn't your space. So there's not a need for you to interject what you think is right or what you think needs to be said. You know, it's about saying, I understand that I am not part of this community, but I do want to learn. And I think it's coming in with that open mind. I think that makes all the difference in the world, is coming in to listen, and to listen, and not just listen because you're waiting your turn to speak, but to really listen and kind of take yourself out of this mode that somehow you know better than I about this in particular, you know. And I found it a lot, you know, even going into, you know, out of the pandemic after, you know, George Floyd and you know, everything that happened, you know, there were a lot of people trying to say, well, we need to do this, and we need to go into Harlem, and we need to go into these multicultural camps, and we need to. And I was like, all right, y'all, like, I'm gonna speak up now. I see where your heart's in the right place, but what you need to do, instead of going into these accounts and telling them what you think they need, why don't you ask them what you can do for them? Mm-hmm. Why don't you ask them what they need, and then you come to the table with what you can provide. But don't just come in acting like a savior. We don't need saviors. We don't need you to save us. We've been taking care of each other. We need your voice and we need your privilege, but we need those. But you first need to understand who we are and what we need and what our needs are before you can offer what you can provide, if that makes any sense.
It makes a ton of sense. And you said it far better than I ever could, which I really appreciate. The thing I would add that I did like about making that connection, or that analogy, if you will, to travel, one of the important things, and you just really said this, Chris, one of the important things is that, you know, these are times for us to listen. And especially people in my shoes, it's time to listen and learn. And, you know, we talk about the need to be uncomfortable because that's how you grow. You face blind spots. You have to be willing to face blind spots and take some lumps and move on, because that's how we improve as people. That's how we improve as a community. That's how we become allies and advocates for our friends in marginalized communities. But the point that I really liked about it, that I thought, because like so much of the way we're talking about this is all very true and all very valid and all very needed. But like we were talking during the break about something sort of different, but this, you know, the need to find joy in these, especially in this particular year, the need to find joy in these moments of life. And when we talk about it in terms of, okay, you know, you're going to need to be uncomfortable, it's important, and it is. But then the way to, you know, flipping the script on that a little bit, where can we inject some joy into the process? And I thought that analogy of travel, for those of us that like to discover and go to a place and do exactly as you just described, you don't go into somebody's home and tell them how they're supposed to, you know, celebrate or perform, I shouldn't say perform, celebrate, honor their traditions. You go because you want to discover, and it's a sense of wonder and it's enriching. And I thought, hell yeah, there's a great way to find joy in these conversations. It can be enriching. It can be a discovery. And I just thought that was a fantastic angle on it.
You know, my panel was, you know, Ezra, Deborah, Tiffany, you know, Alejandro and Sagan. You know, they, you know, for all of us, it's, You know, we speak about these things because we've lived them all our lives. It's not something that we had to learn. You know, these are the things that we had to experience on a daily basis. And so I think it's, for us, it's about being able, when I speak and when I present, it's, I always want to try to find a way to connect with the audience and to get them to really walk in our shoes. You know, I think that is more, you know, it has the most long lasting effects, you know, when you can kind of step in that person's shoes by what they're saying. And I think, my panelists, the seminar, I think that's what it did, you know. And, you know, I want to say this, look, you're going to fall on your face with this. This is something, you know, you're going to make many mistakes. And I think it's important to realize that you're stepping out of your comfort zone. You're stepping out of like only the things that have been that have affected you and the world around you. So you're stepping out of that norm to really learn about these new communities and to really be respectful. But understand that you're going to make mistakes and that's okay. I think it's important more than anything. Most recently, there was this, you know, I've seen it on social media with certain people being called out and, you know, not accepting full responsibility for their mistakes and just owning it and just moving on. And I think there's something to be said, accountability, right? I talk about accountability and transparency a lot. Accountability is everything nowadays. Like, just own it. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fall on your face and that's fine, but own it. Realize you made a mistake. Apologize for that mistake. Don't turn around and make it about you. Don't turn around and be like, I'm sorry, but just apologize. Be like, I need to do better. I apologize. And then just move forward. And I think that's where we are at right now as an industry. I think, you know, a lot of people are realizing that the way they used to do things, it just doesn't work anymore, you know, because people are noticing. And so, you know, a friend told me something that I'll never forget, you know, if you work for a company or you own a company or you own a bar or, you know, you're a leader in some way, just think about it this way, the way you used to do things, if it's, you know, the way you used to do things, don't do them anymore. If it seems normal to you and you've always done it this way, then realize that it's probably wrong. You know, it's probably the wrong way to do it. And really you just kind of getting yourself out of that's, you know, that thought process where, well, it's always worked before. This is all we've always done it. Guess what? It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so yeah, I know I'm just going off on a tangent about that, but yeah, it's mm-hmm. It's just something I can speak about is something I always want to bring to light is it's okay to make mistakes. What's not okay is to not take ownership of those mistakes.
Absolutely. That's really well said.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this one last question and kind of related here. And then we'll shift gears. I keep promising we're going to shift gears. You know, I think sometimes too, maybe the conversation can sometimes, I don't want to say, how should I phrase this? The emphasis will be on in negative aspects of things. And this is incredibly critical to understand that those of us, again, I'll just use myself as an example, need to understand the life experience that you've lived to be able to learn, like we're talking about here. And I keep harkening back to that travel analogy thing keeps resonating in my head a little bit, because one of the things too, when we talk about especially the LGBTQ+ communities, there's a lot of really positive, joyful things that other people can learn. Like I can learn from that, right? You and I were talking about drag queens. Drag shows are fun. It's a great representation of the culture. They're cool. They're great. And to me, that's that kind of example too, where it's like, you know, also we all need to embrace the positive things in different communities. We need to learn from the negative experiences. We need to learn who caused them. We need to, you know, come up with solutions. We need to address them. We need to face our responsibility and all of that. But I guess I'm just saying, you know, we also, I think, need to remember to not lose sight of some of the really positive, wonderful, joyous things that exist in all kinds of everywhere, and making sure that we find those things, because I think those are as educational as anything else as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, especially now during the pandemic, and, you know, all of us are just trying to survive, You know, we're all in the survival mode right now. We're all just trying to make it through the best we can, you know, and I feel like there are joyous parts to our community, because there has to be, you know, when you're part of a marginalized community and you're always having to fight, we have to be reminded what we're fighting for, you know, and what we're fighting for is to be who we are. And, you know, the reason I love drag shows so much, and I, you know, I've kind of made them a part of, you know, Grey Goose in New York City. And I've, you know, really worked, you know, really kind of very intrinsically with the drag community, is because I realize the need for that entertainment, the need for laughter, the need to kind of slip away from the fight, from the daily fight that we all do, that we are all a part of, you know, not even within the community, I'm just in general, but, you know, especially, you know, within the LGBTQ plus community. And what we have to realize too, is for these queens, a lot of this is very therapeutic for them. You know, a lot of, you know, performing for them is kind of their therapy, you know, and it helps them, and they're helping themselves, but they're also helping us. And it's, you know, it's very genuine. And I think for a long time, people have only really kind of grasped at that part of our community, is the fun going pride, parades, parties, drag queens. Like they enjoy our culture, but they don't fight for the people in that culture or respect the people in that culture. They love our culture. They love being part of it. They love engaging in it. They love going to these drag shows. They love going to our pride parades. They love all of that, but they don't, that's where it stops. They don't love the people in that are part of the culture. They just love our culture. And so I think that's where the shift needs to happen. You know, I think that, you know, you can enjoy the beautiful aspects of our community, but you have to realize that you have to, there's a point where you have to start, you know, being an ally for our community. If you want these things to go on and you want to be a part of them, well, then you have to do more than just show up. You have to start fighting for us now, because more is at stake. But yeah, you know, it's fun. I love being queer. I love being part of this community. I wouldn't have it any other way. Is it hard? Yes. Fuck yes. It's hard. Is it exhausting? Absolutely. But is it fun? Is it special? Do we stand out? Absolutely. So, you know, it's bittersweet, but I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest with you.
That's awesome. Thank you, Chris, for saying that. So as promised, because we were talking about shifting gears, you and I were talking a little bit when we were connecting at the beginning about New Orleans and New York. And I was kind of asking you what's going on up in your neck of the woods. And I was telling you what's going on down here in our neck of the woods and so on and so forth. And, you know, I said to you that I think like New Orleans has a heartbeat and a pulse to it when things are doing what it does. And so does New York. And, you know, both of our pulses are very different right now. And like you said, you know, as a brand ambassador, your job is to be out and about and, you know, connecting with accounts and all that kind of stuff. And you said, well, you've been still kind of doing that, but trying to do it 3 days a week and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But so tell me kind of what you were telling me before we went on the air about, you know, what's going on up there in NYC.
So New York is crazy. I've always, you know, I love New York City. It has a life of its own. Has, like you said, a heartbeat. It is palpable. Like the energy in the city is just palpable. And you know, it's there's a reason they say if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, because this city brings out the very best in you. Like you have to show up 100% of the time to be able to be successful in this city. And you know, I moved here in a very, you know, this city has become very a different place than what it once was. You know, the grimy CD, you know, CBGB, you know, kind of, you know, Perry, John Paul Basquiat, you know, Studio 54 days, and you know, those crazy stories here. It's very gentrified, Disney-fied now, you know. And I've never felt unsafe walking in these city, you know, in these city streets, even at night. I was just like, yeah, this is New York, you know, it is what it is. But it's crazy with everything that's happened with the pandemic. And, you know, they're expecting at least 1 million people to move out of the city by the end of the year.
Oh, wow. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I, unfortunately, like, I, you know, my partner and I have, you know, had a lot of friends kind of fly the coop and, you know, go back to other places. And, you know, unfortunately, because their bars have closed or because of furloughs. So the city's kind of resetting itself back to its original mode almost, which is kind of, for me, I think it's kind of amazing to see, because I've always been very, I've always kind of romanticized the way New York used to be, you know, the artistic kind of griminess that it is. And it's weird to kind of see, it's not, of course, it's not, you know, but it's kind of just locals now. And it's, you know, the city shuts down at 11, like all restaurants and bars have to close at 11 PM. So the city's quiet now. And it's, it almost, it's, I don't know. It's really surreal to like walk down, like, you know, walk through Times Square now and it'd be almost completely empty, you know, and it has this kind of like vibe to it. And, you know, you see it within the bars and restaurants, you know, it's becoming more of a local kind of, not small town vibe, but when you go to restaurants and like bars now, it's more about making those relationships, you know, and taking care of each other. I think the city is resilient. And I think I've been able and I've been privileged to see the resilience of this city through the pandemic and through the shelter in place. You know, during the 90 days of shelter in place, for those 3 months, every night at 7 p.m., the entire city would like scream and cheer on the essential first workers.
Right.
Pots and pans. That shit happened for 3 months. And my girlfriend and I made sure at 7 p.m., you know, because we were stuck in our apartments, but we make sure to open those windows and just to see the entire city just cheering on the nurses and doctors and those essential workers. It was a great thing. It was a great thing to be a part of. Like there always used to be this stigma that you couldn't call yourself a New Yorker unless you lived here for like, you know, 5 to 10 years, like you could never call. But I think if you stuck, you stayed here and you weathered the storm of shelter in place and you're weathering the storm of this pandemic in the city, I know now I'm going to call myself a proud New Yorker and I want to dare someone to come for me.
Right on.
You know, come for me. Yeah. I am a New Yorker now. <That's> I've only lived awesome. For 3 years, but I am a New Yorker. I weathered this storm. I get to claim that now.
That's great. I love it. I love it. There's some really compelling similarities. I think the number I always hear thrown around here, Chris, is it's 20 years in New Orleans. So yeah. One of those sort of long ones. And then every once in a while you'll get the, you know, somebody who's, you know, from here, grew up here, and they go, yeah, you're all right. I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm like, come for me. See what happens. Like, I'm a New Yorker. Through now.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Well, do me a favor, Chris, before we cut out here, tell people again, and this will, I mentioned earlier on the radio portion of the show, this will all be in the notes and all that stuff where we can, and I'll tag you in the social media post so people can find you that way. But where do we connect with you? And also, I want you to circle back and remind people about the new gig with Bacardi, because you're, when we can travel again, Chris is going to be coming to a city near you. So I want to just tell people about that one more time.
Yeah, so I was just put into a new role. I got a promotion. I was the Greg Use Ambassador for New York City. I am now the National LGBTQ+ Portfolio Ambassador for Bacardi.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, so I will actually be working on implementing our core Bacardi brand into the LGBTQ+ community. And Bacardi, all of our brands will soon be a staple of the community. And that doesn't mean that we're just going to, you know, show up and get our brand. We're going to be involved with, you know, donating and foundations and working with the community, bringing up the community, bringing up the bartenders within the community, introducing them to a whole nother level of this industry where they can join competitions, where they can, you know, where they can be offered a place where they can actually make a career out of what they're doing, and encourage them to do so. So, you know, I thank Bacardi and Heidi Vargas for seeing the vision and seeing the necessity for this role. They created it specifically for me, and I am beyond happy to to be representing my my community on behalf of Bacardi.
There is, as I said this to you before, I think off air, on air, there is no better person that I know, Chris, than you to do this job. So I'm very proud of you. I'm very happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's still very, I still haven't really wrapped my mind all the way around it yet. It hits me at certain points and I'm like, well, damn. All right then.
And I can't wait till I get the text message. This will be an inside joke, but the text message.
Yeah, of course. Which you will, I promise.
I cannot wait. That's going to be awesome. And what we'll have to do, Chris, also when you, I know you're going to hit the ground running. You already are, really are with all this, but once, you know, things kind of crystallize a little more and there's some programs and planning in place, you know, further down the road, we'll have to have you back on the show. Let's talk about the X's and O's with the program a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, it's going to be a national once traveling is safe again, and we can do it the correct way and the safe way. I will be visiting, of course, and really working with, you know, local, like Bacardi teams all over the country. So, you know, I'm really excited. You know, we're kind of building the plane as it's flying right now. You know, as most are with so many other things. And so, you know, this is definitely a new chapter for not only myself, but for Bacardi.
That's great. I have to ask you one important question. Does that mean, because the brand ambassador, most listeners of the show know what it is. We've even done shows on what is a brand ambassador. So you were, you know, Grey Goose before. Now, does that mean when you come down to the bar that you can buy me a drink on Bacardi out of the whole portfolio?
Yeah, that means we can have a margarita, a Patron Cazadores margarita. We can have a Bacardi Daiquiri. We can have a Martini Rossi Spritz.
Sweet.
Want to do like a Doers 18 on the rocks? I got you too, buddy.
I really appreciate that. That's awesome. The whole book at my fingertips. Chris, thanks so much. And I'm so happy with the new gig because it also means that I'm probably going to get to see you more than once a year, so in person, which is great. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I really do appreciate your time today and all of your passion and great conversation. And the sidebar conversations made my day. So I really, it's great to see you. Thank you so much.
Me as well. Thank you so much, Brian. I always love being a part of your show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Friends, a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have had you here this week, of course. And as you may note on our show notes, if you've gone to the website to get the podcast, and you hadn't heard it here until this point, because, well, we tape a lot of this well in advance. Our featured interview, often the opening segment, things like that, gets taped weeks sometimes in advance of when you're actually hearing the podcast. But sometimes this segment, the parting shot, is actually done a little closer to real time. So when we recorded the interview with Chris that you just heard and the opening segment and all that stuff, that was recorded well before the U.S. general election. However, this part was not our parting shot. Here we are, the parting shot. Yes. Here I sit, friends, on the day after Veterans Day in the United States, and we have a constitutional crisis on our hands, basically. Donald Trump acting like a spoiled toddler, refusing to accept reality, refusing to accept that Joe Biden is the president-elect of the United States, is holding this country hostage. He is endangering lives. He is endangering lives. Dude's checked out, man. He's not governing. We continue to see the worst days of the pandemic by sheer number, day after day after day. The dude's playing golf, okay? It's also a threat to our national security. This stuff has to stop. His enablers who are afraid of him, basically because they are putting their own political interest above that of the country, because they need his endorsement or don't want to piss him off or whatever it is. It's ridiculous. They're handling him with kid gloves because apparently he's like a scorned toddler who needs time to decompress and accept the election. BS. Time to get on with it. Time for the transition. Time to accept reality. And frankly, time to stop screwing with us and putting us all in danger. Get the hell out. But I say this as I sit here on the day after Veterans Day in the U.S., and our veterans are our heroes, friends. These are people who have sacrificed so much. Many have sacrificed their lives to protect our Constitution and protect our democratic institutions. And what's going on is these are being eroded by the minute by Donald Trump and his sycophantic enablers. Now, one of those enablers, unfortunately, is my wife's congressperson. This is Steve Scalise. We live in the suburbs of New Orleans. It's a very red district. He is the House Minority Whip in Congress, and he is one of the leading sycophants, apologists for Donald Trump.
and frankly, in my view, one of the worst lawmakers on Capitol Hill. When I watch him yesterday put out a message on Twitter, a video thanking our veterans, to me, it's the most disingenuous. It was just disheartening to actually watch because of what I just said. So many veterans lost their lives. So many veterans made so many sacrifices to protect our democratic institutions, for us to have faith in them, for us to trust them, for us to have them exist for us and to support the Constitution. This person, Steve Scalise, just like Donald Trump, by enabling him, is eroding those institutions and that confidence. Now, that was the disheartening part. The heartening part, if you actually go look at all the Twitter responses and things like that that he got from numerous veterans, and I can't read, well, I could, it's the podcast. I won't read a lot of them here. Some had very colorful language and other things, but basically expressing the same message that I did. How dare you? How dare you, Steve Scalise, thank our veterans when you are dishonoring so much of what it is they sacrificed, fought, and in many cases, died for. Trump, get out. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.